So get on in here and boogie. We're in the Kia Studios. Rakim, LaJohn, Michaels, and we are on the brink of an unbelievable weekend of sports. We get four NFL games, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm looking at the schedule right now. Tomorrow, Colts, Chiefs, right here on the game. Cowboys, Rams, right here on the game. Sunday, Chargers, Patriots, Eagles, Saints, right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. You know what that means, John? That means the weekend off for a few of our weekend hosts.
Yes. Yeah, that's what it means.
They'll be at home with us, sipping on Tito's and watching this awesome football.
Well, no Tito's right now for me because I'm doing the clean bill.
What?
Yeah, dude, you know I always do this.
Why don't you do like the little diet thing and then still get your Tito's sip on?
No, I got a month trying to be clean, trying to do what I can do.
You're going without Tito's for an entire month?
Pretty much, yeah.
I look at that as torture. I look at that as self-mutilation.
No.
I have no idea why you're doing this.
No, I mean, I'm down 8 pounds in a week. So, you know, kind of going back to that thing. Just, you know, tightening it up, getting ready. I got a vacation I'm already planning in July. We're either going to do Punta Cana or Montego Bay, Jamaica this year. So, I got, you know, going to lose a few more pounds. I haven't really gained any weight from the last diet, but I've gotten a little, you know how you get mushy? How you just don't work out as hard as you want to, and
yes,
you're drinking too much soda, and you don't get on the Peloton and all that stuff. So, yeah, I've done that, so I'm tightening back up. Tighten it back up. So I'm doing the free, no alcohol for right now, at least till Radio Row, because the parties will be aplenty at the Super Bowl. So, you know, I'll have to get my Tito's on then.
Oh, for sure. You know, you could just remove some of the carbs from your diet and then still drink Tito's and kind of reach the same result. But that's just me. We have Mark Owens and Paul Bible with us today, as always, here on the Midday Show with Rick and John. And a lot of fun to get to. 1 hour from now, Steve Merrill of Covers.com, mm-hmm, investment decisions in the world of college and pro football. And right now, John, it's just pro football.
It is just pro football. I got to give some shout-outs from yesterday. First of all, shout-out to Aisha, who works here at Entercom in Atlanta, because I happened to walk in, she does a lot of stuff in the
back.
She's a boss. She is. She's a boss, and she makes good decisions here. Let's just say I was walking out yesterday to use the bathroom, and I jokingly asked her, I said, you wouldn't happen to have two tickets for Justin Timberlake tonight, would you? I know that show's been sold out. The tickets were, you know, $300-$500 to get in the building. She goes, you really want to see Justin Timberlake? I said, yeah, I love Justin Timberlake. And my wife would maybe cry if we go to see Justin Timberlake. She goes, come see me at 2 o'clock. And let's just say I got some tickets for Justin Timberlake. We were on the floor right next to the stage, and the concert was awesome. Shout out Dan Vaskenza, who works for the Hawks, used to work here at 92.9 The Game. I ran into him last night. And also Gregory from the Courtside Club there at State Farm Arena. I walk by. He goes, John Michaels, holy cow. So he gives me a hug. He goes, man, make sure you shout me out tomorrow. So shout out to Gregory from the Courtside Club. We had a blast. My wife turned into a 14-year-old again. She literally was like, I've been watching him since he was in NSYNC. I went to 3 concerts when, you know, I was in high school and middle school and stuff like this. And Justin Timberlake puts on an unbelievable show. So for anybody that was there at State Farm last night, and if you were a single guy, that probably was a good spot for you. There was a nice mix from like 20 to about 45. And there were a lot of women that were in groups of like 10 just by themselves. We had a blast. The dude puts on an unbelievable show. He went on at about 9:20. He performed straight until about 11 o'clock, did most of the songs that you know and love, and it was awesome. Really good time.
So there were more people there than were at the Snoop show.
You couldn't move in his concert. There was nobody sitting down the entire time. Mark Owens, your wife was at the show yesterday. How did she enjoy it?
Who's the best husband in the world? This guy.
Or me.
This guy. No. You went with your wife, so she couldn't fangirl out. I told
Gretchen.
Oh,
no, she fangirled out.
I said, why don't you go take one of your girls? Y'all go have a good experience, because you don't want me sitting there being all like, hey, JT, all right. But the girls went, and they had a great time, and I got credit because I'm going gambling tonight.
So how much did she say she enjoyed the show?
Oh, she loved it.
Yeah.
I mean, he is a performer. Like, JT is it's not a concert, it is a show.
Right.
Like, he doesn't get up there and sing. You know, the stage snaked through the floor. He had a T.I. came out at
he
one
did.
Point.
That was awesome. Yep. Out of nowhere, all of a sudden, T.I. comes running out, and people went bananas. T.I. performed. He did like 3 or 4 songs with Justin. He did one verse of one of his own songs. It was really cool to see T.I. But Mark's right. The entire floor of State Farm Arena was the stage. So he had a big stage up in one side, and then it snaked through, and in different songs he was performing everywhere. So no matter where you sat in the arena, you had times where you were really close to him.
Cool. I'm glad you guys had a good time, man. So John went. You did not. You sacrificed. That's awesome, man. That's awesome. By the way, I love Snoop. I heard his show at State Farm Arena was vastly underattended. Did
really?
You guys hear that as well?
I did not.
I heard that it was crazy
empty.
Crazy empty.
Wow.
For the Snoop show.
Now, let's not give
What's
Mark
up,
too much credit. Mark sacrificed last night so he could go to the casino this weekend. He didn't exactly sacrifice for just, hey, I'm a good guy. He had an ulterior motive as to why he sacrificed.
No, I said, honey, you go have a go experience JT. Go have fun with the girls. Go party hard. Have a night out. I've got doodle bug. I'll take care of everything. Dinner, bedtime, bath. Go have fun. I'm going gambling Friday night.
Did you get lucky last night?
Oh, no, because she didn't get home till well after midnight. I was already out. Sorry. Right, melatonin right. Kicked in. I was done.
Where we were lucky because we were down on the floor. We were parked right in the red deck. As soon as that last song hit, we were the first ones out of the park. We were like the Griswolds in the first Vacation. Boom, we were out of there. I was already on the highway before I think half the people had got out of State Farm Arena. Preacher Man, how you doing this morning?
I'm good. Everything's good. Drive to work was good. Parking lot still terrible. M.O., you want to tell us about your parking experience?
No, we got too much to get to. I'll tell you Monday. No, no, I'm tired. I'm stupid. Stupid construction. I'm done.
That's what's up?
That's what's up.
Okay.
Sports world never stops. So if you missed anything, Rick and John are here to tell you what's up. What's up, Holmes?
That's never easy to lose someone, but I know that Dan and our organization did what we thought was the best for the entire group moving forward, meaning that you have a new and very veteran offensive coordinator coming in here, and that person in Dirk Cutter is going to be really good for this offense.
That's Thomas Dimitroff. He was on the morning show this morning about 9 o'clock. We'll play this again coming up at noon. You'll hear some more from Thomas throughout the day talking about the offensive coordinator hires. And I think they're happy to have new voices in the room that are old voices, veteran voices, guys that have been around not only this organization, the quarterback, some of them coach with the wide receiver and Julio Jones, and voices right now that are not going to be they're not going to be new to the NFL game. Dirk Cutter knows how to call a football game. Mike Mularkey knows how to call a football game. I think the game plan will be much more cumbersome and much more smooth than it has been in the past.
No doubt about it, dude. We're all on board with the Dirk Cutter hire. Well, not all of us. I know there's some fans out there that think it's a recycle and a retread and not going to work, and that's fine. You can have that opinion. I trust DQ and TD, and I trust Dirk Cutter. His resume, I think, speaks for itself. Now, in terms of Thomas Dimitroff talking about Sark and losing him, well, I'm feeling some kind of way about this a little bit, that Steve Sarkisian, according to several reports, is in the mix to be the Lions' new offensive coordinator. They let go of Jim Bob Cooter, who was their play caller for Matt Patricia, and Sark may get that job. Also, the Arizona Cardinals reportedly have spoken with Steve Sarkisian. Of course, they just hired Cliff Kingsbury, so Sarkisian would really be a sounding board and a dot I cross T guy for Kingsbury, because Kingsbury's going to call the plays in Arizona. But Sark would be the play caller up in Detroit if he took that job. I'd rather be a play caller than a lackey, so to speak. So I think this Lions opportunity may look pretty good for Sark.
Well, and he's better than the other candidate they were talking to in Nathaniel Hackett from Jacksonville. We saw what he did or didn't do in the playoffs a couple of years ago for the Jaguars. The good thing for Sark, it looks like he's going to land on his feet. That also leads me to believe, was there more to this story than just, hey, we want to go find a different offensive coordinator? Because he's a lot more respected. You had the 6th or 8th ranked offense in the NFL this year. Let's give away $1,000.
Now it's time to reveal our national signing bonus code word. The code word is...
over. Later on in the show with Randy Max Picks, we're going to do the
over
and under this week's NFL games. That'll come up at 11:20. Over, OVER is the code word for this hour. You have until 10:59 to text over to 72881. Text over to 72881. Messenger data rates may apply. Don't text and drive. It's really dumb.
Before we continue on.
Unless you absolutely have to.
Well, no, you don't really absolutely have to ever. Interesting news coming out of Pittsburgh, as the owners say now, it's hard to envision that Antonio Brown will be on the team in 2019. I want you to hear a quick clip of Julio Jones, And we'll get more in depth in this coming up in Read Between the Lines a little bit later on. But are we going to
have the two best receivers in the NFL here in Atlanta? Is
Julio
that what you're
Jones
telling me? Am I about to get excited here?
No.
Antonio Brown, would you like to see him join the Falcons?
Nah, man, we tight over here. We good over here.
You good over there?
That's
wow.
No, we don't need you, bro.
But you know what? You know what you don't hear? That's shady as hell. You know what you don't hear in there is, oh, man, he's a great receiver. That's my dude. I work out with him. He's tremendous, you know. When you debate wide receivers, you know, it's him and me. You don't hear any dap, any love at all. And by the way, the wide receiver thing is a community, right? It's a fraternity. Like, they got love for each other, you know, exchanging jerseys after games and all that. Didn't sound like Julio had much love for Antonio Brown right there.
It didn't. It doesn't sound like he has any interest in him being here, and he is right. The Falcons are good over here. Now, is Antonio Brown an upgrade over other people? Yeah, probably. Is he better than Mohamed Sanu? Yeah. Is he better than Calvin Ridley? Yeah. They're not going to trade for Antonio Brown. They're not taking on that contract. They're not giving up assets. It's a fun thought to have. You might see those two guys play together one day in a Pro Bowl, but that's about it.
You know, later on in the show, we could, John and I love to play real estate agent, you know, solve problems. Maybe we kick around look, the bottom line is what I know about the Antonio Brown situation. He's going to be traded. The powers that be with the Steelers said that it was hard to envision him on the roster in 2019. What that means is come and get him, okay? That's a memo to the rest of the NFL. We don't want Antonio Brown and the headache and the diva and all the stuff that comes with Antonio Brown. We want him out, but we want a lot in return. This is officially where will Antonio Brown play in 2019? Because it ain't going to be Pittsburgh. So maybe we play a little game and try to find him a new home.
Bengals look like they have their eyes on a new head coach. It's Rams quarterback coach Zach Taylor. They obviously cannot officially hire him until the Los Angeles Rams are out of the playoffs. Could happen as early as Monday, but that looks like the guy they've honed in on to be the guy. The Dolphins, it looks like it's down to Brian Flores, the defensive coordinator of the Patriots, or Chris Richard, the defensive coordinator for the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of plucking somebody from Sean McVay's coaching staff, I'm down with it. I mean, I don't know if it'll work. It's the Bengals after all. But could you imagine if the Bengals went with Hugh Jackson? Right?
No.
Marvin Lewis, there for like 16 years or whatever it was, recommended Hugh Jackson as his successor. Hopefully the powers that be with the Bengals were sober and had a good hearty laugh at that. Are you kidding me? You want a guy that went 1-31 in 2 years at Cleveland here and say, are you freaking kidding? Are you trying to sabotage the organization? So I'm on board with this.
Update real quickly on Georgia's offensive coordinator search, which I thought was done and was going to be James Coley. Maybe not so much. So Eddie Graham was a name that popped up yesterday. A Kentucky radio station mentioned that he was a candidate for the Georgia job. Well, a source in the Georgia athletic department told Dog Nation Thursday night, Graham did have discussions about becoming a position coach, but the offensive coordinator position was never on the table. The Dogs have also been loosely tied to Dan Enos, who was a QB coach at Alabama and is set to become the offensive coordinator there. So it looks like that search can still be ongoing.
Just quickly, John, would these guys that you're mentioning right here be the play caller over James Coley?
Well,
is that not determined?
Eddie Graham, it doesn't sound like that was ever offered. He already said, I'm staying at Kentucky. I'm not going anywhere. Can the Falcons afford to wait on a lineman? We'll hear what Thomas Dimitroff had to say. We'll discuss that next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9 The Game.
We had a lot of focus on offensive line going into the draft as well. And there was, you know, I'd mentioned this before, there was a run on offensive linemen early, and then we were very fortunate to be staring down the barrel of a guy like Calvin Ridley, and we made that move.
That is Thomas Dimitroff, general manager of our beloved Atlanta Falcons. We're the home of the Falcons, and we welcome you back to our midday party, Rick Hamla and John Michaels. That was TD this morning with John and Hugh. Great job by them. Great job by TD, and we appreciate his time. And we're going to replay that interview in its entirety at noon in around the 404. You can hear it on iTunes and 92.9thegame.com. So now we talk about it, and, you know, that's interesting. You got to take what the draft gives you. Isaiah Oliver, and, late in the second round, a lot of people had a first-round grade on him. But, John, we went 26th in the first round.
Right.
Okay, you know, it's like in a fantasy league, you get the 11th pick in a 12-team league. A lot of dudes off the board by the time you go. And so it's kind of cool to hear right there, John. To me, that's revealing that they did go into the 2018 first round thinking offensive line.
Sure.
And we definitely had talked a lot about that. But we also recognize the need for a guy like Calvin Ridley. Never dreamed that he would be there at 26. Dallas passes on him, takes Leighton Vander Esch, Carolina takes DJ Moore, and he falls to us at 26, and he has 10 touchdowns as a rookie. So no regrets, John, but maybe they do take that first round offensive lineman this year.
So I went back. I want to just look at last year's draft because I'll be honest. Outside of our pick, I don't remember exactly who goes where a lot of times because guys end up on teams and you go there. So I wanted to look at the offensive linemen that were off the board. Quentin Nelson went 6. You weren't getting him.
Transcending
and
guy.
And he is a really good offensive guard.
He's a Pro Bowler.
Yeah, he is really good. Mike McGlinchey goes at number 9. To the San Francisco 49ers. You scroll down a little bit. Colton Miller, who's a starting tackle for the Raiders, he goes at number 15. This is where you start to look, okay, could we have moved into one of these spots and grabbed the guy? So Miller was probably too high for your liking. Frank Ragnow goes to the Lions at number 20. He's a center. Now, you could have probably pushed him to guard and let Alex Mack stay at center. Same thing with Billy Price, who goes number 21 to the Bengals. Then Isaiah Wynn goes 23 to the Patriots. That was somebody we had talked about. Unfortunately, Isaiah Wynn out for the year with an injury.
And doesn't that TD quote, and we know that our Falcons scouted those top dogs heavily.
Right.
And I believe Wynn was one of those guys. So do you think Wynn would be a Falcon had he made it to 26?
Probably.
It kind of feels that
remember,
way, right?
He was a guy that was a tackle but could play guard as well, so you would have felt okay sliding him in and being one of your starting guards. Yeah, you had already gone out and spent the money on a Brandon Fusco. But, okay, now you've got a guy that can play left guard, right guard, or potentially right tackle if Ryan Schrader was ineffective. So you look a little bit further down. Obviously, the Falcons at 26 take Calvin Ridley. The next offensive lineman off the board was Austin Corbett out of Nevada at the very top of the second round. So if you were looking at him, he could have been there. Will Hernandez goes second pick of the second round, a guy that we really liked. Braden Smith to the Colts with the about the 6th pick in the second round out of Auburn. He's a guard. James Daniels.
Did you say Braden Smith?
Yes.
Sorry, I'm trying to multitask here. Braden Smith, by the way, has been a rock on that Colts offensive line all year.
So look at what the Colts did, and they're still alive in the playoffs. They go guard. Remember for how many years that
offense turned the whole thing around.
That offensive line was poop for the Indianapolis Colts. They go guard, and suddenly they're back in the playoffs. That doesn't hurt having Andrew Luck back as a healthy player as well. But those were the guys that were in the mix. So he's right. A lot of the guys, and a lot of us had Isaiah Wynn right there in that mix to where the Falcons would be. When Ragnow and Price and all those guys come off the board, it probably changes the Patriots thinking on Isaiah Wynn. They go grab him. And then all of a sudden the Falcons are going, do I take a guy maybe 7-8 picks too high in a Hernandez or a Smith or a James Daniels who ends up going to the Bears? Or do you take Calvin Ridley, who many people had slotted in the top 10 throughout the draft, and they go Calvin Ridley? So the question becomes now, Rick, can you this year afford to wait on an offensive lineman, or is this a time where you might want to be a little bit greedy and maybe move up 5-6 spots if you have to go get the guy of your choice?
Well, I don't think we're going to have to move up to get the Ole Miss offensive tackle that we've talked about. And is it Battle or Settle?
I have to look.
I think it's Battle. His name's escaping me right now. Greg Battle, I want to say, is his name. I don't think we. He's projected
Greg
as
Little.
Greg Little. Pardon me. He is projected as a mid first round guy. We have a mid first round pick. I don't want to move up, John. I think we're going to get a quality guy at 14. And I think it'll be Greg Little. And I'm fine with that. He's the second best tackle on everybody's board, right?
Pretty much.
You've got Jonah Williams is going to be a top 10 pick, and then you've got Greg Little. And you know, we talked about it the other day. He's huge. He's got a great resume. He has played, you know, at Ole Miss, SEC football. You know, he's tough. So that's the way I would go. But to your question, no, we can't afford to wait on an offensive lineman. I think that's my number one offseason priority. Now, obviously, we want to make Julio happy. We want to re-sign Grady Jarrett. I'm assuming both of those things happen. And Dimitrov's already said that the number one priority is bringing back Grady Jarrett.
Exactly.
But as we get detail-oriented here and try to tweak this 2019 roster, we need to protect Matt Ryan, dude. We need to have a rock star offense, hopefully a top 10 defense with guys coming back healthy. And having that rock star offense starts with protecting Matt Ryan. So I definitely want an offensive lineman in the first round, and I don't think we can wait.
Let's hear the Thomas Dimitroff in long form. This clip is actually about a minute long, so we wanted to get into the discussion and then let you hear Thomas right now.
We had a lot of focus on offensive line going into the draft as well.
And there was, you know, I'd mentioned this before, there was a run on offensive linemen early, and then we were very fortunate to be staring down the barrel of a guy like Calvin Ridley, and we made that move. But things are always changing. You can go into a draft with a big, strong, very definitive philosophy, and yet you also have other elements and other scenarios in your pocket that you know can happen if picks go a certain way. So to answer your question, our focus will be continue to be on the sides, both sides of, you know, big and strong inside, and we need to continue to look there. Again, that said, if something comes available that will, you know, bolster our athletic positions on the field, then we will consider it as well.
How high do corners?
So, John, I'm looking through the second round last year because the question is, should we wait? Should we go, you know, defensive line in that first round? As we did the bold predictions, John, and I don't want us to go this way, but a bold prediction was that we take DeAndre Baker of Georgia at 14. Again, I hope we don't do that, but it would be the most Falcons thing ever to do it because, you know, they just love perimeter players. But, John, when you get into the second round, you get into the maybe zone. When you take an offensive lineman in the first round, it's pretty darn close to a can't-miss deal.
Right.
And a no-brainer. Austin Corbett started one game for the Browns this year. And I'm not saying he sucks and is a bust. I'm just saying he started one game this year. He was taken at the very top of the second round. Will Hernandez, good player for the New York Giants. They
and that's
got it
a guy
right.
We talked about for a long time that we would like. But he was, again, do you take him at 26 and maybe push a little bit? Calvin Ridley was a guy that had a higher grade. And I think they figured with Fusco and Lavitre coming back, you had the buffer to be able to go out and take the right guy in Calvin Ridley.
Yeah, and I'm not mad. I'm not saying that we should have taken Will Hernandez over him. I would rather have Calvin Ridley. But Hernandez was a good pick. I had a late first-round grade on him. I think I mocked him to one of the teams needing an O-lineman at the end of the first round. John, the Colts get Braden Smith at 37 last year. Ding, checked that one off as a winner. So far, offensive linemen in the second round last year were 2 out of 3. In terms of having immediate impact, James Daniels been a good player for the Chicago Bears this year. So that is a hit. That's 3 out of 4 in terms of second round offensive linemen.
And then Connor Williams comes off the board at number 50 to the Dallas Cowboys. So he's a guy out of Texas, was a guy that played some tackle, played some guard as well.
Yeah. James Daniels started 10 games, played in all 16. Connor, what's his last
name?
Connor Williams.
Big kid out of Texas.
Has he played or has he been a bench player for Dallas this year? No, he started 10 games, played in 13. So, you know, as I do this, John, and we sort of, we do some real-time research here. It's what we do. So far, so good on these second-round offensive linemen. And, again, Austin Corbett, you know, maybe they took him planning for 2 years down the line, and I don't know the whole machinations of Cleveland's offensive line, but again, like I said, just because he started one game doesn't mean he sucks, just mean he didn't figure in the plans that first year. So there's still some really rich offensive line talent here in the second round.
Well, and you could go all the way down to the third round. Orlando Brown, the monster that he was out of Oklahoma for the Baltimore Ravens, and I know he played some at the right tackle position. He's a mammoth human being, 6'8", 340, 350-pound dude. And I know he played. I watched some of the Ravens games, and he's part of the reason they were able to run the ball.
10 starts, 16 games.
So there is talent there to go get. This is where I don't feel you have to rush and go get somebody. You just got to get the right guy. Figure out which one of these dudes is it. I know a lot of people have had buzz about Chris Lindstrom, a guard out of Boston College, probably a second-round dude. A lot of mock drafts I've already seen have seen this type guy be a player that could go to the Falcons in the second round. I've changed my line of thinking. Like I said, I wanted defensive tackle first. And again, if Quinnen Williams or Ed Oliver's there, I'm taking one of those dudes and plugging them next to Grady Jarrett and being really happy about it with the rotation with Jack Crawford. But I would have absolutely no problem if they go offensive line in rounds 1 and 2. And again, that's determined by what happens in free agency because unlike other leagues, they take care of free agency first and then go to the draft.
Look, I think – when you the LA Rams right now, John, have 4 first round picks on their defensive line. It's how you do it. If you want to be one of the, you know, the it teams, the glamour teams, the taste of the champagne, you've got to be awesome at the line of scrimmage. And it's hard to be awesome at the line of scrimmage when you're dealing with, and all due respect, but when you're dealing with Fuscos and Lavitres and you know, retread guys. How you do it, John, is how the Colts have done it. They Ryan Kelly, remember the Alabama center. He was hurt, got healthy, bam. Their offense has taken off. You have two rookies on that offensive line. And I don't know about you, John. I think the Colts are going to go to Kansas City and buzzkill the Chiefs.
I don't. I am taking the Chiefs this weekend. I just think Pat Mahomes is a different dude. I think it's going to be a really fun football game. And we'll get to that coming up a little bit later on. Thomas Dimitroff said something else to John and Hugh that caught my ear this morning about splash and what a splash could mean to different teams. Do the Falcons need that splash? Coming up next, Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Well, you know, I think splash is a definition that it's loose for me, because some years splashes are making legitimate free agent renegotiations within your own and re-signings within your own team, because that's very important for us. We want to retain the guys that we know are going to be beneficial for us for years to come.
That's Thomas Dimitroff again from the Morning Show with John and Hugh this morning. What he said right there was, you want us to go spend $20 million on some wide receiver or quarterback. How about if we show Grady Jarrett the money? How about if we make Julio Jones the highest paid wide receiver, not only in the NFL, but of all time?
Right.
Those are splashy moves. That's what I heard right there, John. I heard, don't anticipate Dimitroff and Quinn and Flowery Branch at a press conference photo op moment with a brand new player, holding up his jersey. That tells me that it's going to be really smart, judicious moves in free agency, and obviously kicking butt in the draft. And the splashy moves will be keeping our own and making our own happy.
Well, we'll hear the long form in a second. He goes on a little bit more in depth with that, and he said basically a splash move can mean different things to different teams. Like a splash move to the Falcons this year could be drafting two offensive linemen, signing an offensive lineman, or some D-tackle rotation help through free agency. It could also mean, and I think Gerald McCoy is a free agent. I'm knocking on the door of Gerald McCoy, but that's just me because I think he's a guy that's obviously been a really good player at defensive tackle. But point being with all of that is our splash move may not be Alex Mack this year. It could be what you're talking about with re-signing your own. It could be going to get a guard. It could be going to get another tackle. I don't think you're going to see the big name. Like, you're not going to see the Falcons spend $25 million on one player. That's just not how it's going to work.
I'm looking at Gerald McCoy right now. He's actually not a free agent. He's not free until 2022. They signed him to a six-year, $95 million deal.
Yeah, because when we were in Tampa, they were saying this could be the last game in Gerald McCoy's career in Tampa. Now, do they have an out?
Well, yeah, the dead cap hit is zero.
Okay.
In 2019.
That's
so they do have the ability to get out of that contract. His dead cap hit here in 2018 was $12.7 million, and it plummets to zero for 2019, 2020, and 2021. So this is a make-or-break point in that contract. Next year, he's on the books for $13 million. Would you pay $13 million for Gerald McCoy?
Yes.
Well, but, I mean, if you do that, then you say goodbye to Grady Jarrett, right?
Probably.
You know, you can't. I would rather have Grady Jarrett at his point in his career than Gerald McCoy at his point in his career at the same number.
Now, Gerald McCoy is a guy right now that is 30 years old. Has played some really good football
stud
in his career.
He's been
Tampa.
A Falcon wrecker the years.
He's been an everybody wrecker over the years. This is a guy that, and I'm trying to pull up the sack numbers for him in his career, 54 and a half sacks out of the defensive tackle position. He's had, just go to the last 5 years, 6, 6, 7, 8.5, 8.5. So
that's big time.
It's very consistent what you're getting out of Gerald McCoy. He's not been an injured guy. I just think they said his time has kind of come to an end in Tampa. When we were there, all the conversation was, this will be the last game for Gerald McCoy as a Tampa Bay Buccaneer. If I could get him, and I don't know that he would sign this, and I do this just because, remember, Terry Poe was a guy that was looking for long-term money, and we got him on a one-year deal. Would you give him a one-year deal?
Well, I was thinking about Terry Poe as well with, highly paid guy, terrific interior defensive lineman. Why don't we just get him? And I don't know if Gerald McCoy is – you know, if he thinks his price tag could drop to $8 million on a one-year deal, or, you know, $16 million divided by two is $8 million over a two-year deal. But we can't pay Julio and bring back Grady Jarrett and bring in Gerald McCoy at $13 million. We might be able to bring in Gerald McCoy at a smaller number. But, I mean, I feel like we're like window shopping a Rodeo
sure.
Drive right now.
That's what you're
and
supposed
it's like,
to do.
You know, I'm like, man, I'd love to buy that purse for charity, or wow, that belt looks really slick for me, but it's Corinthian leather, and I don't have the cash for that.
But let's be real. If you cut Robert Alford, there's $8 million, and you cut Ryan Schrader, there's another $4 million. There's $12 million right there. $12 million right there, and you already have Isaiah Oliver to plug in. Maybe you keep Tyson Braylor at right tackle. I'm just saying.
No, I hear you,
love to do the fantasy scenarios.
So
in this
I do too. But if we let go of Robert Alford, John, which I think we all think is a distinct possibility, is Isaiah Oliver ready to be next man up?
You're a second round pick. You better be ready to be next man up.
But I mean, we put the same expectations on Duke Riley being as highly drafted, and that hasn't worked out.
Nope.
So it's not like just because you're a second round pick, you're going to be a rock star. And you know that. I mean, he might be. That's the hope and the expectation, but it might not work out. I feel like, and again, like I want O-line. I need to protect Matt Ryan. Maybe we go third-round cornerback if they make the decision to pull the plug on Robert Alford. Maybe a second-round cornerback again. But, you know, is Brian Poole ready to be a mainstay, or is he still our slot corner?
Well, that's what he's going to be, and I'm fine with that. He's a free agent as well. So Brian Poole's going to be there as your slot guy, and I'm okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, can Isaiah Oliver be a 800-snap outside corner? And that's something that remains to be seen. Let's hear the long form of what Thomas Dimitroff said about the splash that the Falcons may or may not make.
Well, you know, I think splash is a definition that it's loose for me, because some years splashes are making legitimate free agent renegotiations within your own and re-signings within your own team. Because that's very important for us. We want to retain the guys that we know are going to be beneficial for us for years to come. As far as going out in the market, you know, we have a keen eye on it right now. But sometimes, again, that splash can be a really good midline guy at a position that we know is not a real flashy position, but it's the guy that's going to help potentially, you know, Matt throw a ball or you know, whoever on the team accomplish what they need to accomplish. So we will be looking directly into free agency, but I'm not exactly sure, you know, if we're going to be, you know, first day participants or we're going to let it settle a little bit.
Okay, John. So what he said right there was someone who can help Matt Ryan throw the ball.
Right.
And he did not talk about sack the other team or intercept a pass. And then he sort of trailed off into and helped the team in other ways. He let you into his brain right there. They know, and I'm really happy to hear this, they know they have to protect Matt Ryan. They know that if they protect Matt Ryan, you're going to win double-digit games. You're going to have maybe another MVP on your hands. And it warms my heart to hear that. And then he also mentioned, John, you know, maybe a splash is for us, a mid-level guy who feels like a big-time need.
Right.
Does that not scream, you know, no-name, off-the-radar offensive lineman?
Exactly
that we can just plug in and you know, fortify and all that kind of stuff. So, TD, thank you for the transparency right there.
That's exactly what it screams. And, you know, that's almost Thomas Dimitroff showing his hand without showing his hand. And TD's very calculated. He's not just going to throw anything out there. But that, to me, sounded like, all right, guys, don't expect Gerald McCoy. And I just used that name because we were discussing him a minute ago. Don't expect us to trade for Antonio Brown. Expect our splash to be some offensive lineman that's going to come in and be a rock on this line. That's going to be Andy Levitre when we traded for him at the end of training camp, at the end of the preseason when we realized, was it Ben Stone? Was that the guy? James Stone. James
yes,
Stone.
Yes.
James Stone couldn't handle being center. Mike Person, he wasn't very good at center either, and we need a guard. That was their splash move that, you know, it didn't pay off, but Levitre's been a rock while healthy the last couple of years.
He has, John. And so, I mean, so it's kind of boring and cumbersome. But, you know, go to the list of free agent offensive linemen and go shopping, okay? And it's not the sexiest conversation to have, but that's what's up. I don't think we're going to spend $7 or $8 million per year on anybody on defense. I think that we're going to be looking to go $5, $6 million per year on a free agent who can come in here and help us out.
Right.
2-year deal, 3-year deal, I don't know, whatever it is. Because, John, a lot of these guys are sort of under team control till they're 28, 29, boom, then they can make that move or they can be let go by their current team. But I don't think it's going to be a sexy splash. I think it's going to be a solid splash.
And that's what I believe it will be as well. I just think this is a scenario where they realize the splash they have is already there. It's Matt Ryan, it's Julio Jones, it's Calvin Ridley. It's all the pieces that we talked about. Grady Jarrett's a splash guy. Deion Jones being back, Keanu Neal being back, which, by the way, I stumbled across. I don't know who was posting highlight clips from the Falcons from the last 2 years. and Keanu Neal annihilating somebody from the Saints. Willie Snead, back when he was on the Saints.
Yes, on the sideline.
Oh.
He took his football soul and showed it to him.
Oh, Keanu Neal. And I saw that and I said, that's what we missed this year. I miss Keanu Neal just absolutely annihilating receivers to where they have that little bit of alligator arm when they come across the middle because they know this dude is going to absolutely uncork us.
I will never forget the crunch sound that that hit made. You were on the field for it.
I was. And like I said, I forget because games go by and you know, and just seeing the highlights again, you go, oh, that'll be back next year.
Kiki, come on back.
Playing strong safety for us. SteveMerrillCovers.com. Go to join us next. We'll get his investment opportunity advice for this weekend. It's all next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9TheGame.com.
We're in the Kia Studios having a blast. John's trying to trade Hassan Whiteside to the Minnesota Timberwolves. And you would think, oh, that's your team. Do you want? They're not my team anymore. I'm a Hawks fan. I'm an Atlanta sports fan. How many times do I have to say it before you will understand the words that come out of my mouth? Happy Friday, everybody.
Nobody really believes you. That's why.
Well, that's fine. I can't control the perception of my behavior or what I say.
Sure.
I can only control what I say and what I do.
Right.
And I can tell it. I watch the NBA constantly. And I watch the Timberwolves if it's like the game of the night. But I am not like, ooh, let me check in on my Wolves. I got to see my Wolves. I do that with the Hawks. I watch the Hawks in a 20-point beatdown
right. So
I can see what the hell's going on with my squad.
Yeah, I watch the Hawks because John Collins right now is so unbelievably good. We've joked with him about slam dunk contests and rookie sophomore game. I know he won't make the All-Star game because he's on a bad basketball team. John Collins is getting to the point where he deserves real recognition for making the All-Star team. And the injuries are obviously a part of it that's kept him down. You know, if he would have played the full season and he would have been averaging 20 and 10, you'd have that conversation. But he's playing some great basketball.
He is, but when you're on a team in the bottom five, right. The coaches and the players aren't looking at you as an all-star unless you are doing something fabulously historic like Kevin Love did. You remember the year with Minnesota?
Like 25 and 14
It was like 30 and 15 or something like that. But it was like the numbers were so gaudy that they had to get him to the all-star game, even on a terrible team. That is very rare. So
he's averaging 19 and almost 11, shooting 35% from the three and 58% from the floor.
And tell him how many minutes?
In about less than 30 mm-hmm. minutes a game.
That's the key. So John Collins, John, 2 years from now, we can revisit this conversation.
I think next year we revisit it.
If next year we get Zion or RJ and we enter the fast lane a little bit. And if you're creeping around 8-7-6 in the East, mm-hmm. then we can have that conversation. But again, if we're bottom five again next year and JC's going 22-12, I think the voters are going to be sound asleep on him as an all-star.
What I love about him, and starting Monday, we get back to our NBA fast break. So the moratorium is officially lifted on Monday.
Huh?
Yeah, about to lift. So you can come in here wearing like a Thaddeus Young jersey and nobody will be mad at you.
Thaddeus Young.
How many
Georgia Tech.
Dude, how many basketball jerseys do
I don't,
you own?
I have probably two or three.
Okay.
Not many. I prefer football jerseys to basketball jerseys.
Just because of the sleevelessness?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I mean, I like basketball jerseys a lot. It's like beach shirts, lake shirts, you know what I mean? Just
sure.
Like, or going to the pool, you know what I mean? You throw it on, you throw it off, and Steve Merrill, is he AWOL?
No, he's up,
oh, he's here
he's
right now.
Yeah, right.
Let's not waste any more. Yeah. Let's get right
Jump
to it.
Jump on into it. It's Steve Merrill, our buddy on Covers.com. Steve, what's up? How you doing?
Doing well, guys.
So let's start with the national championship game from the other day. What was the percentage of people that took Clemson? I was a guy that had Clemson straight up, and I took him with the points. Was this a game where Vegas lost a little bit because Clemson took the win the way they did?
Now, John, if you really wanted to make money, you could have taken Clemson minus 24.5 at 20-1 payoff.
Really? Now, I was not going to do that. I can promise you. I picked them to win 40-39, so I did not see the beatdown coming that actually ensued.
What's interesting about those adjusted spreads, they had them both ways. If you're taking Alabama at minus 24.5, you got a 7-1 payoff. Clemson at minus 24.5 was a 20-1 payoff. Of course, they won by 28. So, once again, it shows that a lot of people saw the blowout maybe happening with Alabama. Nobody saw it happening the other way around as it did. What was surprising to me was early in the game, obviously, the pick six, and then Clemson also had a quick scoring strike, but they were 3-0 in their first series. Alabama moved the ball over 200 yards, I think, in the first quarter or early in the first half. That's the total amount they had last year in the semifinal game. So I really thought all along during the first half that, you know, Alabama was playing better. They were going to still win that game, but once they got behind with the missed kick, the missed extra point, the missed field goal, it just started to kind of deflate the team, I think. And then the defense just couldn't stop Clemson all of a sudden. And as Rick and I talked about, the X factor last week was the, you know, the true freshman quarterback for Clemson. Trevor Lawrence played fantastic. That obviously had a big role as well. It was interesting going into the game, the Heisman odds for next year, Tua was 2-1, Lawrence was 4-1, and then going into the game, Tua dropped down to 1.5-1. The odds are not out now, but I would expect there would be adjusted quite a bit. I would think Trevor Lawrence could be a slight favorite now for the Heisman going into next season.
Interesting, and you know how reactionary people are, and I mean, he's a spectacular player. There's no doubt about that. So the college football national championship game is in the rearview mirror. Now we put our full focus on the NFL playoffs. Got some thrilling games last weekend. Cannot wait for the divisional round, which starts 4:35 tomorrow on NBC. Colts and Chiefs from Arrowhead. Am I nuts to think that Andrew Luck and the Colts can keep this momentum going and go into KC and beat the choky Andy Reid and the awesome Patrick Mahomes?
No, not at all. I mean, this is not a true number six seed. You look at the 5 and 6 seeds in the AFC that are both playing tomorrow on Saturday. You've got a 13-4 Chargers team as the quote-unquote 5 seed against an 11-5 New England squad. And then here you've got an Indianapolis squad that is 10-1 straight up their last 11 games as the 6 seed against Kansas City, who's been very good all season but not quite as good down the stretch. So there's no doubt that the Colts have been the better team here the past couple months, and it's a very tricky game to handicap for that reason. And the reason I say that is because historically speaking, these teams with the bye, the week of rest, home field advantage, and the bye have been a tremendously strong play in the playoffs. In fact, if you look back in the 1980s and the 90s, it covered over 70% of the time on the blind. It was just an automatic play. Now, of course, about a decade ago, the format changed to the NFL playoffs, and we now have the 12 teams. We have more divisional wild card teams playing the week before. So the teams coming into this game, such as the Colts and Chargers, are often a lot better than they were in years past. And the other thing that's changed as well is the fact that these are more precision offenses now. We don't have those, you know, grinded down offensive teams like the Redskins and the Giants and the Cowboys of the 90s. They're just pounding the ball on the ground. The Chiefs are a perfect example of that, and so are the Saints, by the way, tomorrow on Sunday, you know, the other number one seed. These are two high, prolific offensive passing teams, and a lot of times that time off can disrupt the flow where a team like Indianapolis starts carrying momentum in now. And another angle I'll throw out to you guys is first-time quarterbacks have struggled in the NFL playoffs. They went 0-2 straight up last week, both losing outright as home favorites, with Deshaun Watson making his first start. He missed the game last year. And then, of course, Lamar Jackson, the young quarterback for Baltimore, loses outright as a favorite. 0-9 straight up now in that situation the past few years. Patrick Mahomes is the one quarterback that qualifies this week. So I think there's definitely some things to like about the Colts as the road underdog.
Steve, how much does weather play a factor in this game? Indianapolis is an indoor team playing outdoors. Normally this time of the year, cold and windy in Kansas City. Who has an advantage if it comes to that, if it is a bad day weather-wise at Arrowhead?
Yeah, I think there's no question it probably works against the Colts a bit. But then again, you know, Kansas City isn't exactly a type of team offensively that wants to play in the slop either, you know, or any kind of winds or anything, because they want to throw the ball. They probably run a little bit better than Indianapolis does. And Mahomes is obviously tremendously more mobile than Andrew Luck. So I do think weather would favor Kansas City. The uglier it could get, or the colder, the windier it gets. But there's a lot of interesting intangibles here. I mean, when in history have you ever seen a number 60 that comes into the playoffs as a 10-1 team? They've been as good as anybody in the NFL the last couple months, and they definitely have the quarterback edge. Even though Mahomes is maybe going to be the MVP of the league, or at least was early in the season, he still has no playoff starts under his belt.
Yeah, and to your point with Andrew Luck, I mean, he had 39 touchdown passes in the regular season. That was number two only to Patrick Mahomes, who had 50. I got vibes on these games. I love matching them up with the human computer that is Steve Merrill. Please go to covers.com, subscribe to his service. Let's flip over here to the 8:15 game on Fox on Saturday night. Ooh la la. The Dallas Cowboys at the L.A. Rams. And, Steve, please understand that I'm not a prisoner of the moment, okay? I'm an analyst. So it's not like I'm riding this wave of Cowboy enthusiasm and all the Cowboy fans are coming out of the woodwork. I just think they're playing with a special grit. I think Dak Prescott is peaking at the right time. And, Steve, the L.A. Rams have not played a competitive football game in 1 month. Not 2 weeks, 1 month. So am I crazy to like the Cowboys to win this game, not only cover, but win this game?
Yeah, Rick, once again, you know, a couple decades ago, I would have said none of that matters because the numbers say that these home teams with the bye off a loss. In fact, one of the great angles back then was teams off a loss with the bye were even stronger plays because they were good enough to lose and still had the bye week. But it just hasn't worked that way in the recent decade. And once again, the LA Rams, a perfect example of Kansas, like Kansas City, like the Saints also, you know, a high-profile offensive team that's been off for a while. I think that can hurt them a bit. And the one edge the Cowboys definitely have here, without a doubt, is the defensive edge. They're better across the board defensively in all the key statistics, and they do have some momentum here. And then on top of that, you're getting a full 7 points here with a defensive underdog. This line has now started to hit 7.5 in some spots. I think this is a sharp square divide. The reason I say that is because the underdog, once again, has the public backing. If you look at the consensus at covers.com, 56-57% is on both the Colts and the Cowboys for Saturday's games, yet both lines have risen higher. The Colts game has gone from 5 to 5.5. This Rams line has gone from 7, the key number, up to 7.5. So it does look like the sharps are back in that old angle of the home team with the bye, whereas the public will be on the underdog. But I agree. I think you can make a case for Dallas here. Not only are they 11-6, but they've been much better down the stretch this season. They won 7 of their 8 final games. The only game they lost, by the way, was at Indianapolis. And as I just mentioned, the Colts are 10-1 their last 11. No shame there. And if you keep in mind, that was off of 3 straight home wins against conference opponents. We talked about it on the show, what a terrible scheduling spot that was for Dallas back on December 16th. Meanwhile, the Rams lost 2 of their final 4. Offensively, they were not nearly as strong down the stretch. Now, they put up a lot of points against San Francisco in the finale. We'll see if that was the wake-up call. These are 2 quarterbacks also without much playoff experience. Goff, by the way, was in that angle last year as a first-time starter. He lost outright as a 6-point home favorite against Atlanta, as you all remember. Dak Prescott, not too much more experience either, though. So I think these are really 2 quarterbacks that are very dicey in the playoffs. You got the better defensive team getting 7 points in Dallas.
Steve, let me move over to the New Orleans-Philly game, 4:40 Sunday afternoon. Our entire city will be cheering for Philadelphia, which is kind of makes us feel grimy. But the Eagles got blown out in this spot about 2 months ago. It was never competitive. They've complained that Sean Payton ran up the score. Are the Eagles a team that can go down there and exact revenge this weekend?
Yeah, I definitely don't think it'll be a 48-7 loss. What's interesting is the point spread in that game was only 7, and now it's 8. So the line is actually a point higher now. Even though the Eagles are obviously playing much better football down the stretch, they've quietly won 6 of their last 7. We all know they've won 4 in a row. But keep in mind, other than that 6-point Dallas loss, which was a very competitive game on December 9th, the Eagles have won their other 6 games over the past month and a half. Nick Foles working his magic once again. He's now 4-0 in the postseason the past 2 years. More importantly, the Eagles are 5-1 straight up with Foles this year as the starter. They were just 5-6 in all other games with Wentz. So you can make an argument they are a better team right now with Nick Foles at quarterback. Last week, an impressive win. They had a 2-0 turnover disadvantage on the road and still found a way to win that game. I mean, I know Chicago had a lead late. It could have gone either way. But keep in mind, the Eagles had a 2-0 turnover disadvantage and still won. In fact, NFL home teams in that situation, I think, were 41-4 in the playoffs over recent years. So it was a pretty remarkable underdog win. I think their luck runs out this week. The question becomes, does New Orleans win by more than 8? I think it's a pretty big number. Safest play is probably using a 6-point teaser where you can move the line. That way you can take it down to 2 and get the Saints in more of a straight-up win situation. And by the way, guys, if you like the under here, you might want to look at it in the first quarter or the first half, because I do think the Saints could come out a little sluggish off the bye week. They didn't have to play Week 17 serious either. Philadelphia, meanwhile, is definitely going to need another low-scoring defensive game to keep it competitive.
Steve Merrill just got funky with us. He just talked about a 6-point teaser. We don't always get that advice. We get a lot of times we ask you about the point spread, and you're not really feeling it, and you say, I like the under or the over. We just got some tease advice right there. I think that is really, really cool. Steve, I do want to ask you about how you handicap intangibles, because – the Philadelphia Eagles lead these playoffs in intangibles, right? You just mentioned the magic of Foles and all this stuff, and they just seem to win games that go – I mean, I did not think they were going to beat the 2 GOATs in the Super Bowl. I did not think actually, I did think they were going to beat Minnesota. But I didn't think they were going to beat Atlanta in the divisional round last year. I didn't think they were going to make the playoffs. I didn't think they were going to beat the Bears last week. You know what I'm saying? So they're just on this, like, magical carpet right here. How do you handicap those intangibles?
There's no question they step it up in big games. Now, keep in mind, they were at home for the 2 playoff games last year, and then the Super Bowl, of course, was a neutral field. So last week, the Bears' win was the only first true road game they've won the last 2 years with Nick Foles. But once again, the fact that they had a 2-0 turnover disadvantage and still pulled that game out is pretty remarkable. Statistically, they were slightly outgained again last week. I think a lot of it's just short-term statistical fluctuations. I mean, I don't think they've been necessarily the better team in most of those games. And then, of course, you look at their Super Bowl win against New England. You know, we'll get to that game here in a second. New England has not necessarily been the dominant team in the past year or so as they used to be.
Steve, when you look at this one, over-under 47.5, I would think with these two offenses, it would be fairly high-scoring, although the Chargers played really well defensively a week ago against the Ravens. Is that a number that's inflated, or do you think that's right where it should be?
Yeah, New England's definitely a team that can be scored on. You know, they gave up 34 at Miami in that loss. They gave up over 30 in that Detroit loss earlier this year. Now, those are road games. They have been a much better defensive team at home this year. In fact, at home this season, they've given up only 16.5 points a game. They give up almost 24 on the road. And their record has been much better also. They're a perfect 8-0 straight up at home, as opposed to just 3-5 on the road. So you wouldn't think a veteran team like New England would have that much of a home-road dichotomy, but they've actually had one of the most extreme home-road differences in the league this season. And I bring that up because if you look at the scheduling spot for the Chargers, this is about as bad of a scheduling spot as I've ever seen. Yes, they're 13-4 and the better team overall this year, as we discussed earlier, but this is now their third straight road game in 3 weeks, their fourth road game in the past 5 weeks overall. They played at Kansas City back on the 13th on that Thursday night game. And then the last three games, they played in the altitude of Denver, had to travel cross-country to Baltimore last week for a playoff game, and now they have to play on the East Coast again for another playoff game against New England, who's 8-0 at home. So even though I think the Chargers are the better team in this game, the scheduling situation definitely favors New England. And then, of course, Phillip Rivers, a great quarterback in his own right, but he's 0-7 against Brady during regular season, postseason games during his career. Oddsmakers are saying these two teams are equal, though. Home field with the bye is worth at least 4 points. For New England, it's probably worth more, yet the line is only 4. So very strange situation here where we have the better team as the underdog, but they're in a terrible scheduling spot.
Steve, great stuff. Thanks as always.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks.
Thanks a lot, Steve.
Now it's time to reveal our national signing bonus code word. Okay. The code word is
nail, N-A-I-L. Rick Kamler was able to use a
nail
gun on his deck a couple of years ago, and he had video to prove it.
And text, I didn't kill anybody either.
Text nail right now to 72881 from your cell phone. Again, nail, N-A-I-L, to 72881. Message and data rates may apply. Do not text and drive. For complete rules, visit 929thegame.com/rules. We come back. College football cheat sheet includes the six-pack of picks and the latest on the Georgia coordinator searches. What?
The game.
It's brought to you by R.S. Andrews. Keep cool. Get an R.S. Andrews Precision AC tune-up. Another way to make you smile at rsandrews.com. We will have some college football talk at the end of this segment, but of course there's no more college football. But we press on with our six-pack of picks. We will do the point spread on all four of these games this weekend, plus a couple of over-under calls by me, John Michaels, and Randy McMichael.
Yep.
And we will do that right now.
Let's do it.
Let's start these.
Preacher Man, you got the Randy Max. I know he's up at like 5:30 in the morning.
Yeah, we're good.
Okay, we're good. Good.
For the six pack.
Yes.
Yo, can I get a countdown?
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
We're counting down the six biggest games of the week on Rick and John.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
All right, so I always have to start with the records. I don't even want to give Randy's record because he's beaten us all so bad, but I will because I'm a man of the people. Rick Kamla, you are 44, 52, and 6.
I'm going 6-0 this week. I will be down 2 under 500 after this week.
I am 52, 47, and 3. I'm 5 games over 500. Feeling pretty. Look, 2 years in a row being over 500, picking over 100 games against the spread, unlike our morning show who just does picks. That's
shots
pretty
fired.
Darn good. Randy Mack is just obliterated. Like, if you were gambling with Randy Mack right now, you might have a new car.
Exactly.
56, 35, and 4 for the one and only Randy Mack. Because he said this year he's taking it serious. Unlike last year, we wrote it on cocktail napkins on South Beach at 4 o'clock in the morning, which is actually when he sent picks to Paul Bible.
Well, I mean, we see what happens when Randy focuses. He was a pro baller, after all. He does have probably 6 zeros in the bank account.
You have 6 zeros in the bank account.
Not even close.
You have
not even close.
7 zeros.
So
but two of them are after the pennies.
Let's get this thing moving, man. All right, John, I think the Indianapolis Colts are going to cover the 5.5. I actually think they're going to win this football game. So if you want to do a money line thing, I think this is a good one to hit on that. What we have here is Luck's clutch versus Reed's choke. Look, when you were historically choky, you're historically choky.
Right.
And I believe the numbers are KC is 1-11 in their last 12 playoff games. I think it's 0-6 in their last six playoff home games because they're choky as hell. KC, John, here's the sneaky little part of this game. Kansas City is 27th against the run. Marlon Mack of the Colts is rolling.
Right.
He's one of the best backs in the league right now based on touchdowns scored and yards in the last four or five games. I think he's going to be a big difference maker in this game. I'll take the Colts plus 5.5.
I am also taking the Colts plus 5.5, but I do think they're going to lose the football game. I think this is a game that ends up being 35-31, 35-30, somewhere in that range. I will take the Colts plus 5.5. I think everything you said is spot on. It's not Alex Smith as your quarterback, though, anymore. Patrick Mahomes is a different dude. He's going to be the MVP of this league. And I think that's what Andy Reid finally needs to get over a playoff hump. It's a home game. The Colts are going to be outdoors. Have fun with that. It'll be fun. It'll be high scoring. I will take the Colts plus 5.5, but the Chiefs to win the game.
Randy Mack is going the opposite of both.
Of course
he is taking the Chiefs minus 5.5.
That immediately makes me hate my pick.
Yeah, can I change my pick now? No?
Bleep you, Randy.
Just come on,
kidding.
Randy.
We love Randy. We love him. All right, let's continue on here. I'm taking the boys plus 7. And right now it's 7. It may go to 7 in a hook. But here's why. The Rams, to me, have been a little weird and a little choppy since Cooper Kupp went down. You know, imagine taking, Wes Welker out of the old New England offense. It just doesn't operate the same way. The Cowboys are absolutely on a roll. The only blip on their resume is that that godforsaken loss to the Colts, 23-0, which I watched most of that game. It was just one of those games, John. One of those games. But anyway, and the Rams, as I've said, this is a big angle for me. They have not played a competitive football game in a month. Okay, and to me, the game against Kansas City, John, that super high scoring game that was so awesome. The Rams have sort of been a weird, choppy team since right. then. I think they had the bye that next week. I thought we were up against a break, I would start a tripping out. Anyway, I'll take the boys plus 7.
Well, I'm going to riverboat you. I'm going to go ahead and take the new Los Angeles Rams minus 7. To me, it's Todd Gurley being healthy again. It's Jared Goff having some time to recalibrate. It's Sean McVay realizing you had a home playoff game a year ago and you weren't really competitive. The Falcons went in there and dominated that football game. I think the Rams come out with a great offensive game plan. I don't think Dallas will score a ton of points in this game. That's just not kind of how they're built offensively. Give me the Rams minus 7 to win and move on.
Randy Mack will be taking the Cowboys plus 7.
Shut up. Are you serious?
Yeah.
He always takes the Rams and the Chargers and the Dolphins, the teams he played for.
Well, he's taking the Dolphins
I'm
this week.
I'm telling you.
He's taking the Cowboys. I mean, I like the pick. That's the side I'm on. I really can't believe he's going against his Rams. Wow. John, one more quick. I don't trust Jared Goff.
Okay.
He was shaky in the playoff game against Atlanta last year, shaky in some late games. I don't trust that dude. Now, if he goes for 330 and 3, that will be a different story. All right, I'm taking – I don't like this pick at all. This is what I – think will happen
right.
versus what I want to happen. Uh-huh. I want Philip Rivers and the Chargers to go up to New England and beat the Patriots badly. I want them to beat them 40-20, okay? But what I think is going to happen is yet another home win for the Patriots at Foxborough. Steve Merrill said it. I heard the stat somewhere else before him. Philip Rivers is 0-7 head-to-head with Brady in his career. That's a huge stat, dude. I'll take the Pats minus 4.
This week he will be 1-7 against the New England
Patriots. I hope you're right.
This is defense travels, and Los Angeles' defense traveled last week and absolutely choked the life out of the Baltimore Ravens. Great up front with Melvin Ingram and all those guys. Good on the back end with Derwin James and his crew. This isn't the same New England team. I don't think they're circling the wagons this year. I think this is the year that the wheel finally falls off. Give me the Chargers plus 4. I think they outright win this game in New England.
Yes, Randy Mack will also take the Chargers.
Well, shocking he would take that. He wasn't going to go against both of his teams.
No, but you got to look at it this way. If you look at all the games the Chargers have played on the road this year, every game that they've played that they had to get on a plane, they've won. The only one they lost is when they had to drive 20 miles down the street to play the Rams.
Mm-hmm. Nothing wrong with that. I'm going Chargers as well.
I hope you guys are right. I really do. But that's a heart versus head deal right there. I'm wearing a Terrell Owens jersey today. John pump faked me. He was supposed to wear Philadelphia gear as well. and did not, so I'm solo. But I am not raw-dogging the Jersey Giants.
It's too damn cold to raw-dog anything outside.
It'd be some chafing going on my chest. I will take the Saints minus eight. Look, the Philadelphia Eagles are down three defensive backs. Three. And I think Drew Brees is going to capitalize on that, exploit it. They've had 2 weeks off, which isn't a month off, like I said, with the Rams, because we know that the Saints rested in that final game. What's up?
I was going to say, they really haven't played a competitive game in 3 weeks either, if you go back, because they didn't play in week 17. They had a bye last week. This will be the third week. So it's been 3 weeks, almost a month for them as well.
Well, what was their game before the Carolina game?
I don't remember.
They did play.
They played in that one, but you got to think, week 17 – so they don't play there.
And then
there.
Last week, that's 3 weeks.
And then the week leading up to this game. So it's three total
weeks. You don't count
weeks.
That. It's just it's the day of the game or the week or whatever. So, I don't know.
Haven't played a competitive game in a while, but I'm also taking New Orleans.
It was the Steelers before the Panthers. So
and it was
the
really
Saints
good game.
Great game, 31-28. So it's been 2 weeks of inactivity.
Here's
for the
thing. The magic elixir for the Saints is beating them up. The Dallas Cowboys showed it. You walk up, you pound their wide receivers, you play tough. Philadelphia can do those things. The Saints, 48-7, that wasn't an anomaly. It was kind of who these two teams are. I think New Orleans will win. It won't be 48-7. They're going to win like 28-14, 31-14. I think they win fairly comfortably.
Super quick take before we go to the preacher, man. Ted Ginn will be heard from in this game.
Him and his family.
What's Randy got on this one?
Randy's going to take the Eagles. No, I'm just kidding. He's taking the Saints.
He's taking the Saints as well.
Did we all three take the Saints?
Yeah, you all three take the Saints.
That kind of bums me out.
Yeah, we're normally, when we all three are on one, we normally get it right. All right, what are your over-unders? Let's do them both at the same time.
All right, I'm going under New England and the Chargers.
What's the number on that one?
47.5. Okay. I think it's going to be 21-17, something like that. I think it's going to be one of those gritty games in the cold. And I'm taking the over in the Rams-Cowboys game. The number is 50. I think that's going to be a super, super entertaining game. I'll take the over Rams and Cowboys at 50.
Maybe I'm playing the sucker bet. I'm taking the over in the Colts and the Chiefs. 57 is the over-under. Preacher man, I'll take the over in that one. I'm taking the under in the Rams-Cowboys games. I think it'll be entertaining, but I think it's going to be like 28-20, somewhere in there. And I have the Rams winning the game. So under 50 and then over 57. So what has Randy Mack got in his over-unders?
Randy Mack is taking the under in the Chargers-Pats game.
Okay.
And he's going to take the over in the Indy-KC game.
Okay, so we both have the over in the Indy.
He went under in Chargers-Patriots, right? I think that. Do you agree that that's like ball up your fist and start throwing punches?
Oh, yeah.
That's the game I see.
It's Rock'em Sock'em Robot. Remember how you just pound on the thing as hard as you can to make the guy go.
I hope they do that to Tom Brady. I hope they do it to Gronk too.
I want Gronk to play defensive back if they lost.
And by the way, ESPN is completely jinxing Phillip Rivers. They're doing a whole segment here on Root for Rivers. As in, like, the whole world needs to hop on the Chargers bandwagon and get Rivers a ring. That, my friends, is a jinx.
Wow.
It just is. All right, what do you got in college football?
Well, college football, we were talking about this earlier. The Georgia offensive coordinator, I didn't even know there was a search. It sounded like James Coley was the guy, but there were two stories in the last 24 hours that may have you think differently. Well, Eddie Grand's name came up, Kentucky offensive coordinator. There was a Kentucky radio station that said, you know, Georgia's meeting with him, so everybody assumed it was for the OC position. Not so much. A source in the Georgia Athletic Department told Dog Nation on Thursday night, Grand did have discussions about becoming a position coach with the Dogs, but the OC position was never on the table. He decided, no, I'm going to stay with Kentucky. And then there were a couple of reports today that Dan Enos, who is a quarterback coach at Alabama, who's supposed to be elevated to the play caller, the offensive coordinator, that Georgia may have interest in him. I have not seen that really go anywhere. You know, I talked about Derek Ansley yesterday as far as the defensive coordinator goes. Georgia's still got some places to fill, and I won't say it's a priority now, but you want to get it done sooner rather than later because the contact period is now open again with recruits, so you can start contacting guys that didn't sign in the early signing period and that will sign on that first Wednesday in February.
I mean, I think they need to go aggressively after this Alabama quarterbacks coach. And bring him in here, say you're the play caller.
Well, he's
going to
be the play caller at Alabama, so you're going to have to go super aggressive.
Exactly. Like, maybe you go 1.5 mil on this guy. It's a leap of faith, but you would be kind of stinging Alabama a little bit. And Was he not a part of a super productive quarterback
room
this past year? So I kind of like the idea of that.
Dan Enos is a guy who was a head coach before, so he's already got that experience as well. We read between the lines next with Marco.
It's never good when your team shows up on TMZ, or is it? Plus, new year, still the same immaturity. Week in review, it's all coming up next.
As we send it over to Mark Owens for Read Between the Lines, John, I am starting to come up with this list of possible destinations for Antonio Brown, Steelers wide receiver. Ownership there said, we can't envision 2019 with Antonio Brown, which means he gone and which means he traded. So we're going to play a little game at 12:20 in our NFL Bounce. We're going to try to find a home for Antonio Brown because we know it ain't going to be here in Atlanta.
Well, no, it's definitely not going to be here in Atlanta, and you'll hear the cut from Julio Jones here in just a second. What he had to say about Antonio Brown, it'll be interesting what happens in the offseason with him. But, Mark Owens, we turn it over to you.
Some Braves arbitration news, which we'll get to here in just a couple of seconds. I want you to hear Terry Pendleton, Braves MVP special advisor, was on with the morning show. You can hear the entire interview at 929thegame.com. But here he is talking about who he is watching, who he thinks moving forward, and especially in 2019, should be a good look for the Braves.
Well, I would say they need a little more feeding, so to speak. Austin Riley is knocking at the door here. He's really getting himself prepared and getting ready to do this thing. He is he's probably closer, I would say, than anybody else we have down there right now. Pache is coming. He's coming strong too. Don't get me wrong. He may fool us all here in July or August. Who knows? But those are the two names I would throw out there at you guys right now. That you probably already heard about them, but they're strong incoming.
And that's why Alex Anthopoulos is holding on to these guys. These are big chips at the poker table that maybe can help you and increase your stack somewhere down the line, or they can be helped as chips to be held on until the trading deadline or whatever needs to be done to bring guys in there. It leads us to something, Rick. I know you want to talk about the guys that Terry Pendleton just mentioned. But the Braves had some arbitration deals that needed to be done by today. Folty, and I don't think it had to be done by today. Folty, Charlie Culberson, Kevin Gausman, Aroldis Vizcaino, Dan Winkler, Adam Duvall, and Sam Freeman are all arbitration eligible. Folty signed a deal today, 1 year, $5.5 million to avoid arbitration. Charlie Culberson signed a deal, 1 year, $1.395 million.
Wait, 3.9?
1.3.
1.3.
Yeah, 1.395.
I wasn't going to be mad about it, but I was like, damn, Charlie, way to go. 1.3 for Charlie?
Yep, okay. And Aroldis Vizcaino is going to get a $4.8 million. And the Braves apparently have agreed to a 1 year non-guaranteed contract with Adam Duvall for $2.875. The deal will be guaranteed only if Adam Duvall is on the opening day roster.
So, Adam Duvall, you sucked after we traded for you. And we have the arrow's pointing down. So, we'll bring you back on a non-guaranteed deal. If you are swinging the bat beautifully in spring training, then we will leave spring training with you on the roster. But that makes a lot of sense to me. Adam Duvall was a heck of a player for Cincinnati, man. Like a really solid player, power hitter, good defensive player. But he just stunk when he was here. He wasn't given a full crack at a starting job, to his defense. He's used to being an everyday player, and we didn't give him that opportunity.
Well, but he didn't give himself the opportunity because when he was in, he wasn't very good.
No, you're right. But it's not like they said, you're our left fielder or, you know, you're our right fielder. He had, you know, because you got the three spots were set.
Sure.
So, you know, maybe playing every day in spring training, he's raking and he makes the team.
Terry Pendleton will be inducted into the Braves 2019 Hall of Fame.
Okay.
Later on this month.
Congrats, TP.
You can hear that interview at 19 on the
1991 game. NL MVP, Terry Pendleton, guy?
DGB, a darn good Brave?
Yeah, absolutely. No? DGB.
It's a stretch, but it's cool. It's better than Savage Spikes.
don't you talk bad about the Savage Pad Spikes. Read Between Lines are brought to you by our buddies at Right From The Heart and rightfromtheheart.org. All right, Cody Parkey, who is a household name after the Bears' loss on Sunday.
We call him Double Doink.
Now, he may not pan out as a kicker in the NFL, but he was on the Today Show, and maybe he could have a second life as a motivational speaker.
Maybe. If the computer works, nothing's playing.
Well, that was a long pause.
Yeah, I was like,
Mark, I want. Sorry, that was my bad.
And I'm Mark's like, looking at me, going, "What?
What? You can't hear? I can hear it in my ears."
No, I get. He had it in cue back here. He just didn't push the button to put it on the air.
Oh, listen to the technical breakdown for Breacher Man.
He learns how to run the board for 1 week.
I know.
And now he knows.
All right,
every
you act
wire,
like I never run a board before.
Every button. Let's try this again. I wanted that dramatic pause, that dramatic build-up. Now here he is on the day show.
As a kicker, you know, you live for those moments. And I was, like you said, I was 3 for 3 before that. I had a lot of confidence going into that kick. So I went out there, and my long snapper and holder did a great job. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I saw the wind moving a little bit. I said, all right, this is where I'm going to play it. And obviously, I didn't know it was tipped or anything. I just went down, and I thought I hit a pretty good kick. You know, felt good off my foot. And then looking up, and then I saw it hit the upright and hit the crossbar, and I'm like, surely it'll go in. Unfortunately, bounced towards me, but obviously I'm disappointed. That I let the fans, my teammates, and the whole organization down. But I'll continue to keep my head held high because football is what I do. It's not who I am.
I like the fact that he can man up and own it and sit down and maybe have a little laugh about it. Chicago fans don't feel the same way. They don't think there's anything laughable or funny about it. But again, the ball was tipped, in fairness to Cody Parkey. It probably goes in if it's not tipped.
Why did the Today Show have Cody Parkey on? He is a kicker who just missed a kick to have his team bow out of the playoffs. Is this, oh, we feel sorry for him?
Of course
him.
It is.
This is a sensitive 2019. I mean, are you freaking kidding me?
I mean, do you think any – it's the Today Show.
Are you freaking – so they're sipping on wine, catching a buzz at 8:37 a.m.
Lucky.
And they feel like they need to lend out a helping hand to Cody Parkey?
Yep. That's exactly what they do.
That's pathetic.
Well, that's the Today Show.
It's pathetic.
They make a lot of money.
I mean, I could host on the Today Show and make – What do they make? $750,000 a show?
Probably.
It's pathetic to have Cody Parkey. Get out of here with that. Isn't there an actor or a musician or an actual winning football player you might want to have on? With Strahan available?
Boy, I didn't know that. Today's show is his hot button issue.
Nah, it's pathetic.
Colin Cowherd.
The guy missed a damn kick Today and show. He's on the Today Show getting shine and dab. It doesn't make any sense.
I'd be more impressed if he had a cold beer in front of him while he was talking about missing the kick.
And eating a kraut dog. Because isn't that what they eat in Chicago?
Hey, let's get John some Pinot Noir at 8:37 and see how we'll look at his red teeth all day.
If you give me Pinot Noir, I may pour it back on you.
We know how you feel about the Today Show. How do you feel about TMZ?
I love TMZ.
Fine with TMZ. They break news.
They caught up with Julio. Sort of. Here he is talking about the possible addition of Antonio Brown to the Falcons roster.
Glad to see Sarkisian go.
That's a business.
It's a business. Hey, last thing, man. What do you think about AB maybe joining the Falcons? Would you like to see that? Antonio Brown, would you like to see him join the Falcons?
He said, "Who dat?"
Nah, man, we tight over here. We good over here.
You good over there?
First of all, the shadier part was Steve Sarkisian.
Glad to see Sarkisian go.
That's a business.
It's a business.
What did he say?
The guy said, "Are you sad to see Sarkisian go?"
And what did
Julio
say? Julio
goes, "It's a business."
Glad to see Sarkisian go.
That's a business.
It's a business.
That's not getting talked about at all on all the websites because obviously Antonio Brown's a bigger story nationally than is Steve Sarkisian. That was shady.
It was. Remember Julio Jones had the soundbite. I forget when it was talking about Sarkisian's first year here. We read between the lines on it. It's Julio said essentially reading between the lines that Sarkisian was in over his head as an NFL play caller in his first year. And so that's what you get then after his second year, and when they say goodbye to him, there's no love lost there.
Can I do this?
Sounds
real quick
to me.
Just because Miami just hired a new offensive coordinator, Dan Enos, the quarterback coach from Alabama.
So, dog fans, I mean, it was a good idea to bring him over and pluck him from Saban's staff, but now he's calling plays for the Canes. Congratulations, dude.
Are you happy
about that?
Sure. Does that mean Jalen Hurts is following him?
What about – it might. What about Major Applewhite?
Guess he ain't coming.
USC?
Maybe. They've got an opening.
Wow. And now think about Alabama. Do they still have their defensive coordinator, or did he go somewhere else too?
He's still there for now.
So they've lost their OC and their quarterback coach.
And their wide receiver coach, who left and went to Michigan.
Did they lose their offensive line coach too?
And maybe.
Anyway, a lot of
the
coaching. Do we
feel bad for Alabama at all? Nope. Not at all.
It'll be fine.
Not hating. I just don't feel bad for them.
And don't feel bad for them at all.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it is Friday. And what do we do on Fridays? It's a week in review. And I apologize for this because it's stupid. It's silly. It's on the website if you want to hear it again. I don't know why you would, but it makes us giggle because we are children. So here you go, the Rick and John Week in Review.
My explosiveness isn't the same. I'm like I'm a strider. It takes me after the first 10 yards to get moving.
I'm not a quick twitch guy. I'm a slow twitch guy, okay?
We've played two games against them where we've grinded onto each other the entire time.
Oh, really?
They have.
You whack the tight end coach. You whack your OC. You whack your DC. A
lot of whacking.
You whack your special teams coach.
Well, you already got it up there, Mark? No, you haven't got it up yet. It's a little early in the morning to get it up that quickly.
They have pills for that.
They do.
There are going to be a lot of people trying to pull at it. I don't think that that's the way it's going to be taken care of.
Pete Futek's not a Ram, a Charger, or a Dolphin, but he's got a great website, College Football. If you talk from College Football News, I completely lost my train of thought.
Hey, Papa! No, senor! No, senor! Chicago! Chicago!
Beat a man! Woo! You gotta beat the man.
All right, let's sit on this for a minute.
We're just gonna be scooterific here.
And all that does is create leverage with your current employer to get a raise. Create leverage with your leverage.
Okay, you the man. The Midday Show is the best show on 92.9. Don't at me.
Thank God it's Friday.
We will not at you. I promise that.
Oh, well done, man.
You know
well
what you'll done. Hear next, though? Thomas Dimitroff, general manager of your Atlanta Falcons. What did he have to say to John and Hugh earlier? Coming up next, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9TheGame.com.